Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We're talking about, I think, a crucial issue, which is health and wellness for busy women. That's the title of a great new book by Natalia Fazilova. She has a doctorate in nursing practice, and she is well-versed in both conventional medicine and in traditional Chinese medicine practices, herbology, and so on. She's got a great portfolio of skills. And she brings them all together in this book, which addresses concerns of busy women. Now, the book, I have to say, it's got a little bit of a feminist perspective, but it's sort of not a strident feminist perspective. It's sort of a soft feminist perspective, because the notion is that women can be subject to enormous stress in this society. There's enormous demands uniquely placed on women, especially women who are simultaneously undertaking a professional career while trying to raise a family. Maybe there's a sandwich generation. They have responsibility for parents as well. Natalia, you talk about the pitfall of perfectionism that some women are prey to. And that perfectionistic trait is actually a direct threat to their overall health. Can you explain?
Yes. Being perfectionist, which I am myself, try to make sure everything is done.
You're a recovering perfectionist, shall we say.
Yeah, I should say that. I'm a recovering perfectionist. Yes, things need to be done a certain way. I agree with that. But I think for a lot of us, we kind of overthink issues sometimes, and we're over-controlling, and certain things do not have to be done perfectly. My kids probably shouldn't listen to me talk at this point, but there's certain things that we need to let it go or let other people do it, and it's okay. I mean, I have children, I have a husband, and I usually demand them or make sure I encourage them that they do things correctly in their life, but at some point I realized that I was overprotecting and overcontrolling my family, and it kind of made me realize that I'm not giving them opportunity to learn things their own way and to become independent, and actually not everything should be done my way. There's other ways to do things, and it's okay, and that's something that I had to learn the hard way. And I learned to let people do things. I don't have to do everything myself. I'm not being a superwoman. And doing everything perfect, what helped me to kind of step away from that attitude was, I'm obsessing about a problem that I'm facing now. How important it's going to be, let's say, in a month from now, 2 months from now, 6 months from now, a year from now, would it make a difference that things were done this way and not the other way around? And that kind of gives you a different perspective, that not everything should be done perfect. And it's a personal choice, I guess. We, a lot of times, overstress a lot of little details that in a long run will not make a difference if they're done one way or another. And that's extra stress as a busy woman we do not need in our life.
And also, and this is, I think, a feminist theme as well, is self-esteem is an issue because, you know, I think many women have to accept that they are not just the sum total of their accomplishments or that they don't have to fight continually to prove their mettle. They're okay. They're loved. They should be more into self-acceptance rather than being on an exhausting treadmill of accomplishment to overcome perhaps a bit of a void in their self-perception.
Yes, and it's probably time in our society. There's such a high demand on people to be successful and to be goal-oriented and achieve certain milestones by certain age, and it's competitive. So understanding that our children get, and society in general, is if you did not get to college or by the age of 30 achieve something, you basically are not successful, and that's kind of give a negative, I guess, self-image, I would say. I've met women, if they taking care of their children, staying at home, they believe they do not amount of anything in their life, and self-esteem is low. Well, I've seen sometimes people who are highly successful, at least in my eyes, and they still have low self-esteem. So I don't think the degrees and accolades and accomplishments, unless person personally believes that they do amount to something, would make a difference, because I've seen all spectrums from both sides, people who do not have any degrees and they feel very self-accomplished and their self-esteem is very high. And I've seen people, unfortunately, that might have their PhDs and other education and still have very low self-esteem, maybe because they don't like their looks, maybe they don't like the way they behave, or they don't like their lifestyle. The list could go on and on and on.
Sure.
The point is, it has to be internal balance. It has to be an internal belief. And one thing I want women to realize is that there's no right or wrong. Whatever they believe in, that's what should be right or wrong. Or whatever they believe they could accomplish, it has to come from within and not from outside. And my grandmother, who I dedicated the book to, she had a good saying, one plus three is four, two plus two is four, three plus one is four as well, which means that there is different ways of achieving a balance. There's different ways, and everybody is unique. And the trick is, I guess, to recognize the uniqueness and to be able to use the uniqueness that everybody has to their best advantage and to get the best in their life that they believe in. And there's no right and wrong with that.
I suppose somebody else's grandmother might have said, all roads lead to Rome.
Maybe.
Okay, so you're coming back to specific women's issues. You know, an issue that I think is really terrifying for many women is a concern over the potential for breast cancer. So let's say, you know, you get a typical patient coming in to see you who may be in their 30s or 40s, and they have some family history of breast cancer, and they're concerned. Maybe they've had an abnormal mammogram. What can they do from, I mean, obviously, from the medical standpoint, they need to be checked frequently, but basically, they're going to say, you know, there's no specific pill you can take. I mean, you can have a bilateral mastectomy, I guess. So you don't want to, you know, worry about your breasts, but that's, you know, only an answer for Angelina Jolie and maybe some others. What are some of the lifestyle measures that can be undertaken to remove that potential scourge?
There's recent research that indicates that the breast cancer might be linked to estrogen dominance that's being more and more spoken of at the present, and changing a lifestyle. And
Can you define that for us? Because I think that's a really important issue in women's health, is this notion of estrogen dominance that seems to get worse in midlife. What's up with that?
Yeah. Well, we do have different hormones that plays with our cycle and our menstruation, and then it's a balance of progesterone and estrogen at different phases during menstrual cycle. And as a woman gets closer to perimenopausal years, that balance gets affected. Body's preparing for menopause, and progesterone levels decrease naturally as we age, and estrogen levels, they do not rise, but because now there's imbalance of progesterone, estrogen becomes a dominant hormone, and it causes a lot of symptoms. It might cause swelling and tenderness in the breast. It might cause mood swings. It might cause a lot of other symptoms, and it might cause fibroids. It might cause endometrial polyps, and the list goes on and on and on. And what happens, actually, because of the lifestyle, because of the environment that we have right now, which is polluted, we're finding out that all the chemicals that we have in the environment, once they get absorbed in our body, they behave, and we call them xenoestrogens, or artificial estrogens.
Right. Spelled X-E-N-O, like xenophobe, or, you know, outside.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's a weird spelling.
Right, so once they get absorbed into our body, they behave themselves as estrogen, and so which means they will have the same effect as our body produces estrogen in. And one of ways to treat it. My book has actually a whole list of substances that might behave as xenoestrogens. Try to eliminate them from the diet. Try to eliminate them from environment. And list is example would be different chemicals that you use in the household. Some chemicals like we have in plastic bottles like BPA, and some of the parabens that we have in our cosmetics. And the list is pretty long. So eliminating those products in the environment would be probably the first step. Fat deposits in the body, they store estrogen, so losing a little bit weight and exercising might help the issue as well. Following an anti-inflammatory diet and eating healthy and changing lifestyle might help as well to decrease that estrogen that's being stored in our body, unfortunately. And improving one's immune system by following and taking in foods that high in vitamins and vitamin C and turmeric and fish oils that increase actually our body's response to cancerous cells that might develop, and helping body to recover from the stresses that we're exposed to.
So what's the role of exercise in overcoming estrogen dominance, and indeed in terms of cancer prevention? Because now there's actually a branch of oncology, which is called exercise oncology, where they're actually researching the effects of exercise on preventing cancer and even modifying the course of existing cancer. There's some evidence that you can actually reduce your chances of recurrence of breast cancer with an exercise program.
Right. Well, exercise program, it has so many positive aspects to our body by improving circulation, helping to metabolize fat and carbohydrates, and improving our muscle tone, and helping calcium to get reabsorbed in our bones. Like, least it goes on and on and on. And when I was writing my book chapter on exercise, I actually asked two professionals to help me to contribute, and one of them is rehab specialist who deals with people who then with exercise injuries, and another person is actually personal trainer and exercise specialist. So they gave me their insight on benefits of exercise and how to start proper exercise regimen and benefits of exercising aside from physical fitness, but actually gaining a health level and improving circulation and helping to decrease insulin resistance and helping metabolize and excrete a lot of chemicals and toxins that we have in our body. And getting exercise, that's the problem for busy women. Finding time to exercise is a problem for busy women. That's a problem for me as well. I mean, I try to get as much exercise. I do a lot of walking and exercising between the breaks and everything else, but setting aside time, and that's what I heard from other women as well. Like, I would love to go to the gym, but do I have time for 2 hours to sit in the gym? So what I've done in the book with the personal trainer, we come up with very mild fitness program that could be done in the office without going to the gym. It could be done at home. So it's kind of introductory exercise for a person to do without going to the gym. Obviously, it's not enough to achieve the level of fitness that we're talking about that would be beneficial, but I believe it's the first step, especially for somebody who didn't exercise in a long time, the first step to become active. And then hopefully once the body gets used to a simple exercise routine, to move forward and get into more heavier exercise and more advanced exercise.
So does it take, do you have to be a triathlete or, you know, an Ironman contestant to get the benefits of exercise for cancer prevention, heart disease prevention? Or can the busy woman incorporate some moderate commitment to exercise and still, you know, get about 80% of the full benefits?
Yes, even the increasing amount of walking might do a great changes. It might bring on changes and benefit any busy woman. And as I said, if somebody didn't exercise for a long time, they might have stiff muscles and stiff joints. So becoming a triathlon runner in a month, if you didn't run in the last 10 years, probably not the best idea. But starting slowly is you're doing it carefully, even with just starting walking, that's going to be a benefit, and eventually it's a progress with regular exercise or doing at least minimal exercise on a daily basis of plus for any person, I believe. There's no limitation then.
So when it comes to fatigue, you have actually a chapter in the book on chronic fatigue syndrome. Is women's fatigue of a different character than men's fatigue? Is there something unique about women's fatigue where, you know, perhaps there's some different mechanisms involved?
Fatigue is fatigue, but what's different about women's fatigue would be probably combining factors of hormonal imbalances probably will take a role, and it's all an individual. I've seen male and female patients, and fatigue, and especially chronic fatigue syndrome, treatment might be a little bit different. What we evaluate when we see a patient with chronic fatigue might be a little bit different. There's definitely connection between progesterone and estrogen imbalance. There's connection to thyroid imbalances. There's connection to lifestyle and lack of sleep. There's connection to metabolism issue, digestive issues. The list for chronic fatigue to diagnose is a very long one, but finding the actual cause is a little bit different maybe for a man and a woman. That's the difference. But otherwise, I've seen signs and symptoms are very similar in both patients.
So, anything else in the book that you want to point out that people can find if they access Health and Wellness for Busy Women?
Well, the book itself has four parts. So, first part is calming your mind, a connection between mind and body, and how to help to calm the mind using different meditation techniques and changing outlook of life. Thinking more positively. Second part of the book talks about body connection and hormonal imbalances, restful sleep, and exercise regimens, and beauty chapter that talks about how to take care of your skin. And the third part talks about soul and relationship issues. There's actually a little chapter on sex. There's a definite connection between hormonal imbalances, fatigue, and it will affect the sex life of females. And working in gynecology practice, I've seen it on a daily basis that patients will come in and they don't even consider it a problem, believing that if they married over 15 years, sex life almost non-existent at that point in married life, and that's not the case. And when we address that issue in our conversation during appointment, it was like, oh, but I don't even want to have sex. I don't have any feelings anymore. I think I'm fine with it at this point in my life. And that's
and
not
that,
fine.
That may be okay, but it may also be a sign of some underlying health problem that, or an emotional problem, or maybe an underlying depression that interferes with, you know, sexual expression.
It could be a combination of a lot of things. It could be depression, it could be hormones, it could be diet, it could be chronic fatigue. The list is on, and trying to talk to patients and kind of trying to find a reason for it and trying to help them to recover. And then once we find a reason and help them to recover, they come in, you see their eyes sparkly, and then they're grateful that it changed their life, it changed their relationship. And that's kind of exciting to see and to kind of it's very
right. I mean, this is a prevalent problem. Is you know, we talk a lot about ED, erectile dysfunction. You can, you know, barely get through a baseball game or basketball game without a Viagra commercial, but women often suffer from issues related to sexual performance. And that gets a short shrift. And, you know, again, it in the context of a relationship, that may be, you know, the way it is. But it also may be, you know, an area that deserves some sort of intervention to move things forward so that there can actually be more, you know, satisfying emotional.
Finding the underlying cause probably will make a big difference. And once the underlying cause is more or less eliminated, then working on relationship issues and any other emotional problems that person might have in relationship kind of help them to move it along would also help.
Well, I knew we couldn't have a discussion about health and wellness for busy women without a discussion of sex, so I'm glad we got to that very important topic. I think it's a central theme as well. So you cover a lot of ground. The book is very comprehensive. My compliments to you. It's really been, I'm sure, a labor of love, and I think it's an expression of your wide variety of professional interests and your very broad perspective on integrative medicine that you put this book together. It's a useful guide, Health and Wellness for Busy Women. And once again, you're also in practice in New York. You will have a website. Is that ready for prime time? You want to share?
Yes, it's under construction now. It will be coming up within a couple of weeks, hopefully. And it's going to be www.aihwellness.com. So we're putting a lot of information on the website, and book obviously will be available on the website as well. So it's work in production.
Excellent. All right. Thanks very much for joining us. Natalia Fazilova is someone that we work with at the Hoffman Center. Natalia is a doctor of nursing practice and associate professor at the City University of New York and author of a great new book, Health and Wellness for Busy Women. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. It was a pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.